My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and of my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. That was from page 74 of the big book, The Seven-Step Prayer. My name is Mary Lou, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, friends. For some reason, this past week, I had trouble pulling this whole thing together. I prayed, and then I wrote, and then I prayed, and I didn't like what I wrote, so I threw that away, and then I prayed. The bottom line was Mary Lou kept getting in the way. So hopefully I was finally able to turn it over to God. Of course, I just did this step. I did the seventh step here back in September, so we could just play this tape, the recording, you know, and I wouldn't have to do it again. Okay, step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Now, in the 12 and 12, Bill Wilson talks about that this is a step that separates the men from the boys. Now, this is where we really get down to the nitty-gritty and start really working on ourselves. You know, my obsession for alcohol had been removed from me. And I had completed my fourth step and my fifth step, taking an honest look at myself probably for the first time in my life. And I did not like what was revealed. I did not like that person that came out of my fourth and fifth step. You know, I was a selfish, self-centered, angry, fearful human being, and I did not like that. You know, I didn't have the alcohol to take away the emotional pain anymore, and the emotional pain got to the point where I was either going to drink, kill myself, or change. And so often in my sobriety, that's the way change has come about. You know, I hang on to things and hang on and hang on. And when the pain gets great enough, then I say, okay, God, I'm ready. Here it is. I'll give it to you. And it's surprising it always works. And I don't know why, you know, after 30 years. 35 years, thank you. You would think after 35 years I would have learned this. I think that the progress is that I don't hang on to things quite as long as I used to. I don't put myself through quite as much mental torture as I used to. I become more willing to let go faster. You know, but I'm at this point where I don't like what I'm seeing. And I had gained hope in the AA program. I saw that you were happy, truly, truly happy. And I became willing to try what you told me you did to gain that happiness. And that was to take a look at my character defects. And I hated that word, defects. I did not want anybody to say that I was defective in any way. Thank you. My sponsor spent many hours explaining that to me. You know, my sponsor helped me list these character defects. You know, I knew right from wrong. However, there was a lot of the stuff that she was pointing out to me that came out of my fourth and fifth step that I still wanted to hang on to. You know, they were my survivor skills. It's all I had known for 38 years. You know, and how could I let go of it now? And I wanted to hang on. And I had to pray for the willingness to be willing. Okay? God, help me wanna. Make me wanna. Now, step six is basically working is step one on the rest of my life. You know, in step one, I dealt with my alcohol. And in step six, I deal with the unmanageability that was caused as a result of my alcoholism. Excuse me. You know, it's the lifelong process of step six. It's just that. It's a process. You know, I didn't do step six and my character defects all disappeared. It's been a long, sometimes happy, sometimes painful process. You know, I started the process of becoming entirely ready. And I strive to increase my willingness and my readiness throughout the rest of my life. With the help of my sponsor, I became aware of how my defects had manifested themselves in my life. Now, steps 6 and 7 is really simple if you break it down. I don't do what I want to do, and I do what I don't want to do. Steps 6 and 7, I don't do what I want to do, but I do what I don't want to do. You know, I don't do what I want to do, which is what is comfortable to me, which is familiar to me, and which is usually my self-will. Instead, I do what I don't want to do, which is usually uncomfortable, unfamiliar, and God's will. You know, if I remain comfortable, I will not grow. You know, comfortability kills. When we become comfortable in our sobriety is when we usually fall. You know, today, excuse me, my sinuses are acting up today. My back's fine, but my sinuses aren't. Today, when I'm having a bad day, and you ask me, Mary Lou, what's going on? How are you doing today? I don't say, you know, I'm having this really rotten day. You know, life really sucks sometimes. Instead, I try to say, you know, I'm having a growing day today. And when I look at it in that frame of mind, I'm having a growing day. That alone makes it much less worse. You know, it's not nearly as bad as, oh my God, I'm having this horrible day. I'm just having a growing day. So I try to look at it as an opportunity. I don't always do that perfectly, but that's what I try to do today. You know, our character defects are basic human traits, which are given to us by God. You know, human traits have become distorted out of proportion by my self-centeredness, causing enormous pain to myself and those around me. I love what it says in the 12 and 12 on page 65. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, it isn't strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose. Every time I read that, I have to smile, I have to laugh. You know, that so describes me. I was born with an abundance of natural desires. Boy, was I ever. And I often let them far exceed their intended purpose. When they drive us blindly, or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfaction or pleasure than are possible or do us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us on earth. This is a major measure of our character defects. If we ask, God will certainly forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation. That is something we are supposed to be willing to work towards ourselves. He asks only that we try to do our best and make progress in building character. Try to do our best. You know, we don't have to do it perfectly. We just have to try to do our best. If I am willing to ask, God will remove my defects of character. But they don't just magically disappear. You know, I have to participate in the process. God will remove them, but I have to do my part. Now, he puts situations in front of me that allows me to choose to do what I want, my will, and what's comfortable and familiar, or do what I don't want to do, God's will, which is uncomfortable and unfamiliar. I did not want to come to you and talk on all 12 steps. I just didn't want to do it. You know, I found it frightening. I find it uncomfortable. A lot of my character defects come hitting me in the face, and I have to work on them all week long to come here. I was afraid I would sound stupid in front of you. I'm afraid that you might not like me. You know, God did ease me into this. About a year and a half ago, he had me do the fifth tradition here, and then last September, he had me do the seventh step. And then Kevin started approaching me about doing all 12 steps, and I'm here. Thank you, Kevin. You know, I'm a perfectionist. I want to do this perfectly. You don't know how lucky you are that you are not right now receiving the PowerPoint presentation that's going around in my head. As in all service work, what I'm finding is that I'm gaining much more by doing this than what I'm sure I'm giving you. You know, I'm gaining so much. I'm gaining spiritually. I'm gaining in my conscious contact with God because I'm putting more effort into it right now. You know, it's an area that God has showed me that I need to work on. And through doing these 12 steps for you, I'm getting that opportunity to work on my own spirituality, my contact with God. It's also allowing me to take a real good look at where I'm at right now, this moment in my recovery, in my sobriety. You know? And I look at the things that I need to change, the things that I need to work on. You know, through working the steps, I've learned to take responsibility for my action. You know, one of the things that I learned through working steps 6 and 7 is to pause and think before I act. You know, instead of just reacting the way I used to. You know, to pause, to think. You know, and by doing this, by pausing and thinking before I act, I don't have to make near the amends that I used to. So it's kind of selfish and self-centered to think that way. But, you know, I pause and I ask myself, is it kind? Is it loving? Is it necessary? Is it true? You know, I used to use, well, I'm just telling the truth as a way of criticizing you, as a way of making myself look better, you know. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just telling you the truth. You need to know the truth about yourself. Yeah. Three fingers pointing back at me. And that's something that I had to work on. So what if it's true? What's the point of my telling you? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it something you really need to know? And is it any of my business? Sometimes the best thing I do is keep my mouth shut and do nothing. It's none of my business. I only have to worry about my side of the street. And, you know, I have found over the years that there's enough garbage on my side of the street that I don't have to worry about your side of the street and try to keep yours clean. I need to spend the time on my side of the street. I only need to be responsible for what's inside me. You know, God won't do anything for me that I'm totally capable of doing for myself. Now, in the beginning, some things are easy to give up because I didn't want to face the consequences of those actions. I was ready to have God take them, not because I was wanting to grow spiritually, but because of self-protection. I was protecting myself. You know, I didn't want to be found out. I didn't want the consequences of those actions. And I was not trying to grow in the likeness of God. Today, I hope that when I give up a character defect, or I'm asking God to help me give up a character defect, that I'm doing it because I want to be a better person, not because I'm afraid of the consequences. I'm doing it because I want to be a better service to Him and to you. You know, the essence of the sixth step is a willingness to change. The essence of the seventh step is prayer. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. To be humble means I have humility. And, you know, the word humility has a bad rap. You know, we often look at it as being submissive and being less than. You know, if I'm humble, that means I'm not as good as. But in reality, it simply means a proper or accurate assessment of myself, knowing our limits, our strengths, and our weaknesses. When I was doing some research on the word humble and humility, I came across an article written by Mike Austin, who's a professor of philosophy at Eastern Kentucky University. And I liked what he said. People who practice humility tend to reflect inward. But when it comes to where they focus their energy, it's all about other people. They put others before themselves, but in a mindful manner that does not end up hurting themselves in the long run. I'm putting others first, but not in a way that's going to hurt me. In a way that's going to serve God. That's humility. Okay, in the 12 and 12 on page 70. It tells us that we must have humility if we want to stay sober. For without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. That can't be much plainer than that. Without some degree of humility, no alcoholic can stay sober at all. Nearly all AAs have found, too, that unless they develop much more of this precious quality than may be required for just sobriety, they still have a much chance of becoming truly happy. So again, you know, recovery is about more than just not drinking. You know, we can develop enough humility to stay sober. But if we want to truly be happy, you know, we're going to work on becoming humble in the sight of God and man. Okay, on page 75 and 76. We needn't always be beaten into humility. A great turning point in our lives came when we sought humility for something we really wanted. We really want it. And we truly want to be humble. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Each of us would like to live at peace with himself and his fellows. We would like to be assured that the grace of God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. We have seen the character defects based upon short-sightedness or unworthy desires. Okay, let me start again. We have seen that character defects based upon short-sightedness or unworthy desires are the obstacles that block our path towards these objectives. We now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon ourselves upon others, and upon God. Now, how many of our problems are simply because we're making unrealistic demands on ourselves, on others, and on God? What type of expectations do you put on yourself? Are they too high? And that comes out and reflects upon other people. The chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear. Primarily fear that we would lose something we already possessed, or would fail to get something we demanded. How about that? The chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear. Primarily the fear that we would lose something we already possessed, or we'd fail to get something that we wanted. Does that sound familiar? Living upon a basis of unsatisfied demands, we were in a state of continual disturbance and frustrations. Therefore, no peace was to be had unless we had to find a way of reducing these demands. The difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to anyone. And think about that. That's really a kind of deep statement. The difference between a demand and a simple request. The seventh step is where we make the change in our attitude, which permits us, with humility as a guide, to move out from ourselves towards others and towards God. The whole emphasis of step seven is on humility. An attitude of humility means we have a realistic view of ourselves and of our place in the world. We also understand our role in our recovery, appreciating our strengths and our limitations, and having faith in a higher power. Humbly asking for the removal of our shortcomings means we are giving complete license to that higher power to work in our lives, believing God's wisdom far exceeds our own. Do you believe God's wisdom far exceeds yours? Working the seventh step gave me freedom. I no longer wear myself out trying to control every situation and its outcome. I am still fearful at times, but I no longer have to react to the fear in a destructive way. I have the freedom to act constructively, or when appropriate, to do nothing. The process of the seventh step brings peace of mind and serenity. We are being changed. We are becoming a living miracle. Each of us, we're becoming a living miracle. The process will continue as long as I remain teachable. A few examples from my own past 34 years of trying to be sober. When I came here, I was a liar. And, I lied about everything. Now, initially, I stopped the big out-and-out lies. Okay. And again, the reason I did that was because I knew sooner or later you were going to find me out. And I was becoming to realize that it was hard keeping all these lies, remember who I told what to. So it was easier to start telling the truth. On the big things. Okay. But I couldn't tell the whole truth. What I found was, and my sponsor kept pointing out to me, was that when I told you something, I had to change it a little bit. I had to make myself seem a little better than what I really was. Or I had to make myself seem a little worse than I really was, make myself into a victim so you'd feel sorry for me. Now, I couldn't tell the out-and-out truth. I'd tell you I got up at 6 o'clock, and I'd come back to you 15 minutes later and I'd say, you know, when I told you I got up at 6 o'clock this morning, that was a lie. I really didn't get up till 6:10. And you'd look at me, huh? Who cares? But I cared, okay? I cared. And that's how, you know, I had to get to the point where every time I didn't tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, I would go back to that person and say, you know, I just lied to you. And they would look at me like, you know. And I didn't, you know, I got sick of going back to people and telling them that I lied, you know, that I stopped doing that most of the time, okay? Another example, my need to control. Okay, toilet paper, you put it on the roll. Does it go this way or this way? Okay. Now, in my mind, it went with the paper coming out over the top. And that was the only way. That was the right way. You couldn't, and I would argue with you. If I came into your home and you had it the other way, I would turn it, and I would turn it, and then I would go out and I would tell you how stupid you were to have it that way. What's wrong with you? And my sponsor would patiently point out to me that really, yeah, it wasn't any of my business. And I would point out to her, but this is something I can change, so why shouldn't I change it? And she would say, well, you can change the toilet paper, Michael. But that's not the point. You're trying to change somebody else's preference. And they're allowed their own preferences. They're allowed to think the way they want to think. They don't have to think like you. Okay, so then I got so I would go into your house, I would change the toilet paper, but I wouldn't say anything to you. But I wanted to inside. And then I got so I could go into your house, and I'd look at it, and I'd go, I'm going to deserve it, Eddie! And I would go out and smile at you. And now I go into your bathroom, I look at it, and I laugh at myself, and I think about all the wasted time and energy I spent on stupid toilet paper. I mean, it drove me crazy. I spent months trying to convince people how to put their toilet paper on the roll. When I was 5 years sober, I didn't get the raise that I thought I so much deserved. After all, I mean, everybody else got the raise, why didn't I? And I went in and see my boss. And he proceeded to tell me that he didn't give me that raise because he was trying to get my attention, that I did not listen to him, that I was closed-minded, that I was very rigid in my thinking. Everything had to be my way or no way. And he proceeded to go on and on and on. And I got very angry and resentful. And on the way home, I stopped at my sponsor's house to tell her how poorly I'm being mistreated at work and how dare him treat me this way. And when I got done crying to her, she looked at me and she agreed with everything he said. And she said, I've been trying to tell you these things now for 5 years. And he's right, you don't listen. I thought, but I didn't say it. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? And she said, we're going to say the seven-step prayer. And we got down on our hands and knees, and she held my hand, and we said the seven-step prayer together. And I asked God to remove those things. Now, they didn't magically go away, but I felt better. And because I was now open to the possibility that these things may be going on in me, I was able to work on them. You know, I was able to become more tolerant. I was able to become less judgmental. I was able to not look at everything as black and white. You know, the world exists in grays. And there were some things that, in the long run, does it really matter? My son, she used to say that to me all the time. In the big picture, does it really matter? And I'd look at her and say, fuck yes, you know? I hated that. The big picture. Who cares about the big picture? Right now, it does matter. And she just loved me. But he was right, you know, hitting me in the pocketbook, not giving me that raise, got my attention. Okay. And I became willing to start working on those things. And probably the biggest example was in 1994. My sponsor that I've been talking about, Gretchen Lutch, I was 11 and a half years sober, and she passed away. Now, I had been diagnosed in August of that year. I had been diagnosed with breast cancer. I had had a radical mastectomy. And Gretchen had been going to all my chemo appointments with me. She went to all my doctor's appointments with me. And I felt I needed her more than I had in a long time. And God took her from me. And I was so angry at God, so angry. And I hurt so bad inside. And that's the worst I had hurt in my sobriety in 11 and a half years I've been sober. And I decided that I never wanted to hurt like this again. And the only way to keep from hurting like this again was I had to die before anybody close to me died. Now, I didn't think about actually killing myself, but I was going to die. And what I did was I canceled my chemotherapy, did not go for my appointment. I quit eating. I quit praying. I quit meditating. I quit journaling. I quit doing everything that Gretchen had taught me to do in the last 11 and a half years, everything she taught me to help me grow spiritually, to help me be mentally well, to help me be physically well. You know, I quit doing it all because I did not ever want to hurt this way again. Now, I did not think about her four children and what they were going through. I didn't think about her grandchildren and what they were going through. Now, I didn't think about how can I be able to help them get through their grief, you know, better. It was all about me and my pain and how dare God do this to me. Now, this lasted 4 days. Thank God after 4 days, sanity sat in. And at this point in time, I was a clinical supervisor at an inpatient drug and alcohol treatment program. And I went to my supervisor and I told her, I said, right now I am not even as emotionally as well as our clients. I got to leave. And I sought out a therapist that I was also in recovery, and I spent time with her. And that weekend, I surrounded myself with my support system. I surrounded myself with the women in AA. I cried with them. I let them hold me. I let them love me. And they slowly, they began loving that pain inside me away. But that scared me to death. I did not realize how fast I could go back into my old survivor skills. Just like that, I went back into my old survivor skills, which is going inside my walls. And you can't touch me. You can't touch me in here. Today, I know that if I go back inside those walls, it represents death. And today I choose life over death. But it was just showed me how fast. 11 and a half years sober, thinking I'm working a good program, thinking I'm spiritually fit, and just like that, I wanted to die. When we look at, as I said, I was not concerned about Gretchen's kids at all. And when we look at steps, the third step prayer, is take away these difficulties so that I can bear witness of those you'd have me serve. In the seventh step prayer, now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. And it's about serving God and others, not about me anymore. And that's what the steps, the seventh step does. It's not about me anymore. It's not about me. Sometimes I hate that, but The Daily Reflections, July 7th and 8th, I want to read a little bit from. Peace is possible for me only when I let go of expectations. Any of you had trouble with expectations, planning the outcome? When I'm trapped in thoughts about what I want and what should be coming to me, I'm in a state of fear or anxious anticipation, and this is not conducive to emotional sobriety. I must surrender over and over to the reality of my dependence on God, for then I find peace, gratitude, and spiritual security. And then July 8th, when I finally ask God to remove those things blocking me from Him and the sunlight of the Spirit, I embarked on a journey more glorious than I ever imagined. I experienced a freedom from the characteristics that have wrapped me up in myself. Because of this humbling step, I am clean, I am free. When my serenity is disturbed, when I'm irritated or discontented, I'm motivated to reach out to God and ask for help to get out of myself. I ask God for acceptance. I try to see where my character defects contributed to the situation. Could I have been more patient? Was I intolerant or judgmental? Was I insisting on getting my own way? Was I afraid? Was I dishonest? Were my motives pure? As the defects are revealed, I ask God to remove them. The situation may not change, but as I practice humility, the peace and serenity, which are a natural byproduct of placing my reliance on God, returns. Today, I know God's grace is sufficient for today, and that's all I need. Thank you.
Questions?
That was great. I actually don't have a question. I just wanted to let you know. I don't know if those are examples or not, but I'm about a couple months from giving my first lead, so I have developing this habit of really watching how people start their beginning and how much time they spend on examples and just kind of learning as I go, to taking little notes. But I learned early on that I was just going to listen to your message, because your delivery is so perfect that it'll be years before I can do it that well.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Somebody? Bridget had a question.
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic. And you know, while I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, yeah, I'd like to ask a question, but I just don't know I can't ask a question to that. That was a fabulous presentation, and you really talked a lot more about 6 and 7, just really this design for living and how it really has saved your life. And just giving the examples of what happened in your life, that you had all those years of sobriety and you just check it because things weren't going your way. You're emotionally suffering over the loss of your sponsor. So I just want to thank you. And there was something I was going to ask, but I can't remember what it was. Yes, so I'm at a loss, but this was wonderful. I love this little handout that you gave all of us. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
So thank you. And if I think of something in the next few minutes, I'll let you know. Thanks.
I got another example I can give you. Okay, food.
Yeah.
What was that room about? Probably my first obsessive disorder had to do with food. And, other than 2012 and 2013, I've always had a problem with food. I've always, been overweight. I know that if I ask God to help me, He will, but for some reason, this is one area that I want to hang on to and want to control myself. I want to have some control. And I'm an adult and should be able to do this. So in 2012 and 2013, In 2012, I was diagnosed with oral cancer, and I had to have surgery on my mouth, and I underwent several weeks of radiation treatment, which made my mouth and my throat so sore that I could not swallow without holding liquid oxy in my mouth, and then slowly letting it go down my throat. So for the first time in my life, food was not a problem. And that's the only time food has not been a problem, is when I couldn't eat. But again, I struggle with this over and over. Now, right now, I'm 20 pounds overweight, and I'm getting to the point, you know, again, where I'm getting enough disgusted with myself and upset with myself. I'm about ready to turn it over to God, but not quite. I'm going to hang on to a little bit longer.
Mary Lou, thank you. That was an excellent follow of 6 and 7, the going through with my 12 and 12. I had a lot of that highlighted that you were referring to. And the one thing I was listening to your message about when the boss wanted to get your attention. And did you look at that as a spiritual experience, even though you were kind of pissed off?
At that time? No.
Afterwards,
you did. In hindsight, yes. Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people don't understand about it, what a spiritual experience is. Don't know if they've ever had one, but I see that.
Oh, definitely.
That was one for you.
That was God going for me what I was unwilling to do for myself. And he did it through my boss. You know, God works through people. And he puts the people in my life to give me what I need.
Hi, Mary Lou. Thank you for.
I don't have the right to ask questions.
I don't have the right to ask questions. God, it's tough. That's a tough program. Anyway, I want to thank you for tonight. I can't wait to go through the other steps that you spoke about. You did an excellent job tonight, and I'm looking forward to putting together this package and listening to all these things, because If they're anywhere near like they were today, it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I knew you'd do a great job, even if I wasn't here. It isn't about me. It is about you. Thank you.
All right. My name's Ian. I'm an alcoholic.